Get road trip ready with a service checkup at your local Chevy dealer. They can save you time and money and get the job done right the first time, worry-free. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for current service specials or to schedule a test drive.
All right, let's talk about that straw purchaser again. In the news, I think mostly because of what happened there. He walked out of court, it seemed to me, after signing a piece of paper promising he would return. And that was that. And I got to tell you, former judge, former Cook County prosecutor, Pat O'Brien, I don't think that's what a lot of us expected. I think a lot of us were thinking, hey, we got the feds involved here. There is this new initiative nationwide to crack down on straw purchasers and the illegal flow of weapons to our cities as a way to crack down on violent crime. And then here we see something like this happen. It's super puzzling to me. Thanks for joining the show, Pat. Appreciate it.
You're welcome, Madeline. Thank you for having me on.
What can you tell us about that? I think the expectations were very different than the outcome we saw. What do you say about it?
Well, I can understand why people would be puzzled, and I can certainly understand the frustration and anger of the Superintendent Brown, because here he is having lost one of his own, who by all accounts was a remarkable police officer, and having another police officer seriously injured and at this point still in the hospital being treated for gunshot injuries. So I can understand the frustration.
Sure.
The crime itself is the actual purchase of the weapon and delivery to a felon. And it doesn't necessarily include as an element of the crime or an element of the punishment what happens after the gun gets into the hands of the felon. And here we see, of course, not just, you know, the purchase by this Mr. Danzy and then the transfer of the gun to one of the Morgan brothers. And the result of that is you've got, I think it's Monty Morgan, shooting the two police officers and killing Officer French. But the crime itself, as the elements and as the consideration for punishment, doesn't necessarily include or require you to anticipate what the outcome will be. But it's still frustrating. The magistrate who set the unsecured bond certainly is someone that you want to ask why the heck, what were you thinking? But beyond that, you know, you still have a person who has the presumption of innocence. At some point, there's will be a you know, finding of probable cause, and then a subsequent either plea or trial. But it just is extremely frustrating, especially with all of the emphasis on weapons and the flow of weapons into and across state lines.
Pat, do you think the judge did the right thing here? Because let me just preface that by saying, when I first heard about it, I think so many of us who are not in the legal profession thought, what? How could that be? It was like a $4,500 recognizance bond, which is my understanding is you sign off, and if you don't return, then you have to pay, but you don't have to pay just to walk out. And that he's just sort of free. There's no ankle monitor. There's no nothing until you go to your court date, what, a year from now or so? I think a lot of us looked at that and said, my gosh, that doesn't seem right. But when I've talked to other folks in the legal profession, they say he has no priors. He has no background. He is, you know, he's an employed guy who's, you know, living a life, abiding the law in all other ways until now. And he's not a threat to the community. So this judge, this federal judge, remember it's not county, this federal judge acted exactly as he should. Hard to stomach, maybe, given the circumstances, but maybe it is the law. Do you agree with that?
Well, I don't know that it's the law. There is leeway for a judge to set the bond. And the fact that Mr. Danzy doesn't have any priors, well, I wouldn't expect him to have priors because he wouldn't be able to commit this crime if he had priors, because he himself would be unable to purchase the weapon. So that's just a silly thing to say that, geez, he doesn't have any priors, set the bond in this fashion. But I will say is this. You know, there's a state crime for this exact same thing. And there is no reason why our state's attorney couldn't file a charge for the unlawful delivery of a firearm, which is a class three, and have a warrant issued, and then have the Indiana courts agree to execute the warrant. We could get this guy back in custody, get him in front of a Cook County judge, and essentially set a bond, or maybe set no bond.
Could the federal judge been within the law and still detained him, kept him without a bond?
You know, that person certainly could have. The order probably would have been appealed. I don't know, what a magistrate is essentially like what we call our associate judges. So they're not judges that get appointed necessarily by and confirmed by the Senate. It's the district judges sitting in the Northern District who essentially, when there's an opening for a magistrate, vote that a person into that opening, and they serve with limited jurisdiction. So it's not a judges make mistakes. Having been one, I'm not going to tell what mine were, but certainly they make mistakes. To me, this seems like, and understandably, the relationship between Danzy and the Morgan brothers, from what I read in the paper, mm-hmm. is fairly close.
Yes.
And it was Danzy's vehicle that one of the Morgan brothers was driving when the police stopped the vehicle and all of this started. And Danzy certainly knew that he was buying a gun for somebody, not just with what essentially any felony could be the basis for the charge of selling to a felon, but selling to a felon whose background was robbery. So it's not as if Danzy could have thought, I bet you he needs this gun because he's going to go fox hunting. He
no.
had to know that this is a tool of the trade for robbers.
According to the federal complaint, Pat, just to give that background, agents said they showed him paperwork from the dealer, and at first he said, yeah, it's for me, the complaint states. But then later, after more questioning, he admitted he bought it for someone he knew, Eric Morgan, and he knew that he had a felony record, and he knew he couldn't buy a gun for himself, and he knew he was buying it for him. Didn't say he knew what he was buying it for him for, but that they had been in a relationship for 3 years is how he described it, and he loaned him the car, he bought him the gun, he even went along with whatever type of gun that Eric Morgan wanted, and he purchased it, and he gave it to him, and then here we are. And back to Superintendent Brown, you're right, Superintendent Brown, it was very clear about his feelings. He says this is an outrage, he says he's super disappointed, extremely disappointed in the judge and the decision to release this guy in an unsecured bond. He says it's a disservice to Officer French's memory, to the entire Chicago Police Department, and to the thousands of men and women across the country who work around the clock day in, day out to stem the violence that's plaguing our communities. And I just wonder, in the wake of us hearing so much about the focus, even from a federal level, and certainly even more so from a local level, Chicago police, we're trying to stem the flow of weapons. We're trying to get tougher on that type of crime. And I just look at this and say, this doesn't seem like getting tougher on that type of crime.
Well, it clearly, just sitting back there, you'd have to say, as you have, and as a number of people have, including Superintendent Brown, how does the focus of the federal government in trying to stem the flow of weapons into the hands of felons, how is that advanced when they get one, a person who has done exactly what allegedly they're trying to prevent, where the gun ends up killing one police officer and seriously injuring a second, and then essentially not setting a cash bond, which would have to be secured either by money or by property. It seems to me that everybody has the right to be, I guess, puzzled by this. And, if you want to remedy this, force the state's attorney to file a state charge, issue an arrest warrant, extradite this guy back to Cook County, and have a Cook County judge set a bond that essentially isn't a slap in the face to the police and to everybody who lives here.
Stand by for a second, Pat. We're going to come back to you in just a moment. We have to pause here on WGN. Sure. And Pat O'Brien is former judge and weighing in and trying to help us understand what happened here with the straw purchaser situation. I think something that most of us had a reaction to when it happened, didn't quite understand why it seemed like the penalty was so low. Pat O'Brien is with us here. He is a former judge, former Cook County prosecutor. And, you know, I got to ask you about this because a lot of people were surprised about what happened with the straw purchaser. We mentioned that. Senator Durbin introduced a bill, and he's been very outspoken about this. He had a very passionate speech on the Senate floor about exactly this type of crime, the straw purchasers, the illegal flow of weapons, and that how cracking down on that is one of the keys, not the key, but one of the keys and solutions to stopping some of the violent crime surges we're seeing in major cities across America. So he introduced this bill, Pat. It says we need to boost the penalties if there's a reasonable cause to a suspect or to suspect the person the straw purchaser is handing the weapon off to will use it in a crime. If the straw purchaser should have known this person is a felon and would use it potentially in a crime, that the punishment could go as high as 25 years in prison for that particular crime. Is that something that could help judges in this case in order to have more leeway to do more?
Well, certainly it could. Right now, my understanding is the maximum penalty for violating this federal offense is up to 10 years imprisonment. But typically, you'd be talking about, I think, someone who makes multiple purchases, either at the same time or over a course of time. In this situation, it's one gun to what we know and to one person. The frustration is this. I know all the politicians are focusing on guns in the sense that let's get the guns off the street. Let's get the guns, regulated. But as much as anything, you've got to focus on the person who's holding the gun. And the straw purchaser is nice, but even if this person was held in custody, this Mr. Danzy, you still have the result of him giving it to one of the Morgans and the Morgan brother having shot and killed an officer and wounded another. Mm-hmm. You've got to concentrate on the people that are using these weapons. So, as you indicated, this isn't a be-all, end-all on straw purchasing. It is one piece, and to me, I'm not even sure it's the biggest piece. We have got to crack down on violent crime. We've got to be more aggressive. We've got to use, they've got a state RICO statute, go after gang structure. You've got to have a new piece of legislation, which essentially gives witnesses and their families protection when they come forward and testify and relocate them so that they don't have to fear the gangs that live in their very neighborhoods. You've got to basically understand that you've got to go after drug sellers because it's the way that the gangs keep liquid, keep cash in their pockets and the members of the gang's pockets.
Pat, I'm running out of time here. I do want to ask you, because we're getting this question, no problem. You've been very helpful in helping me understand this, and I hope our listeners, too. One of the big questions we keep getting is, why wasn't the woman charged at all? They simply questioned her, and she was let go. Was that the right way to handle that? What happened there?
Well, I hate to do this as a backseat or back chair quarterback. Hypothetically, I would have looked at and until it was shown otherwise, thought about charging all three. Clearly you now have put this woman out on the street without any kind of, I don't know if they put her in front of a grand jury to lock her statement in, but there's nothing that prevents her from testifying at trial for one or both of the brothers that there was, you know, to make up a story about and say the police took action, which is inappropriate, and the shooting was in response to that inappropriate action. There's nothing that prevents that. So I think, hypothetically, here we have three people. They split out of the car. I don't know what the statements are of the woman, but both brothers, the other brother knew he had a gun. They knew that the potential was there that he was going to use a gun. They might even talked about him using the gun because they distracted the police. One of the three officers had to chase after one brother, and that took him out of an ability to back up his two fellow officers.
Mm-hmm.
And then that brother gets the gun from the shooter and tries to get the gun away from the scene. And absent, the neighbors who are good Samaritans and very heroic, capturing him and finding the gun, we don't have that brother or the gun.
Right.
So to me, this was looked at and done in a way that hypothetically, I really can't understand.
Right. Well, that's just what I was going to say. None of this really makes sense, anything that happened that day. I was just trying to, and you've been very helpful at this, trying to help us make legal sense of it, why this is the way it's being handled in the courts afterwards. Pat, I appreciate your time. Always do. And thanks for calling into the show today.
Anna, thank you. And hopefully everybody can keep cool.
Yes, keep cool, keep safe, all of the above. Yes. Thanks, Pat. Pat O'Brien is a former judge. He's an attorney, former Cook County prosecutor as well.